heard about Anchor. It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
So number 132, it is Happy American Thanksgiving Eve. Even though I'm not American, I still will be celebrating tomorrow by taking the day off work to watch football. But before we get into football, college football, and obviously I'm here with my guest Joe Provost, a noted Michigan Wolverine fan, we just want to send our well wishes out to Everson Griffin. Obviously there was that bad incident, but he just had that really bad, like, we don't really know what happened. I saw the video with him, the gun in his house, and look, no one was harmed. He cooperated. It was a mental health crisis, and we were just glad that everything was handled well and that no one got hurt in the during the course of the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's right along there with you. I echo your sentiments, and, you know, that stuff's always scary, and I do think, you know, we're coming around on the curve with, like, the whole mental health thing, especially – you know, as it relates to athletes. I know for the longest time, it's like, oh, you know, these guys are athletes. They're paid very well. Like, what, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, anybody's capable of, you know, going through unfortunate struggles. So.
Exactly. And it's one of those things too, where folks, we echo the sentiment here on YWC Football Talk. If you need help, please seek help out. Don't be quiet on the matter.
For sure.
So anyway, we saw a piece of the segue in there. We talked about this off air. We wanted to bring that up first. But this is going to be mainly a college football episode. Now, obviously, I know, like I said, there's going to be football tomorrow. But look, college football it's unlike the NFL right now because they're truly winding down their regular season, where this is rivalry week. We're obviously going to talk about some of those games. But first of all, we got to talk about the rankings. And this week, we had some changes. We now have, well, Georgia State at 1, Alabama and Ohio State flips. I believe now Ohio State is 2, Alabama's 3. And the real kicker at number 4, the Cincinnati Bearcats finally getting their due. Obviously, Joe, your Wolverines are at number 5. But for now, I think it's just great to see the committee finally recognizing that. I just still can't believe it that they didn't recognize them, not after beating Notre Dame, sorry to Sean, but that they waited until they beat SMU to finally put them in.
Yeah, you know, it's all it kind of, ever since, like, the playoff format has taken shape and they implemented it, there's every year there seems to kind of be like this one team, if not two, that are from not a Power Five or maybe even a Power Five that's played a really inferior schedule. And so the great debate always becomes, are we looking for the four best teams or are we looking for the four most deserving teams, or is it a mixture of both?
Exactly. There's always like that one team where it's like, oh, hey, you haven't done enough. Like, even one sentiment I want to echo, because I say the same thing too. I think that the committee was waiting. I know this might sour you, but obviously Michigan State beat Michigan, but I feel like they were waiting for Michigan State to truly, like, lose, and then they were just going to knock them out. Same thing with Oregon, because obviously, well, I mean, I know Michigan State lost bad to Ohio State, but Oregon got obliterated by Utah this weekend. So We'll see what happens, but I feel like there's just a lot of these placeholder things, and it's just one of those things where, look, you're right, there's always, like, those teams that people have a problem with. And I remember with the Michigan State thing, I know you're obviously a Michigan fan, but the week after when you guys beat, I want to say, I don't know who you played the week after, I want to say Penn State, and they lost to Purdue, which I feel like a team every year goes in the West Lafayette and gets upset. I don't know what it is. There's always one a year.
Yeah, that place is just kind of like a sleeper area where it's just like, I mean, to put, I've attended a game there, and it would be the equivalent of like a really, it's crazy to say this being it's Big Ten football, but it's literally the equivalent of a premium high school atmosphere. Like, I could see why teams just kind of like sleepwalk going in there, and all of a sudden you get boat race, because Purdue, under their coach, has always been capable of putting up points. It's just whether or not, you know, they're clicking or not. So it's just one of those weird places where you go in, there's not a whole lot of energy. You don't got fans yelling at you. It's a really sleepy town. It's just unlike anything else, really, as far as like the Big Ten goes. So, just wanted to give a little bit of context as to why I think that happens sometimes when teams go there.
No, yeah, it's like that, like, kind of thing you sleep on, where you're like going in there, you think it could be an easy dub, but then sometimes you get upset. Like, obviously, there was the one a few years ago where Ohio State went in there and got upset. And there was the whole Tyler Trent story. Obviously, I know that's a little bit different because he was a student that went there was sick, and they rallied around him. And I think game day may have, I think College Game Day was there for that one.
Yeah, that was the kind of the Rondale Moore coming out party.
Even that too. Noted muff punter Rondale Moore from the Arizona Cardinals. but no, so that was just my point with going back to the playoffs of Michigan State, where I feel like, look, you guys are like there. And I know we're going to get into the game, but I'm going to say this right now. I feel like if you guys were to beat Ohio State, I think all hell would break loose for the committee. I think that's like the one, like, I know you're going to hate this, but I feel like that's their break glass in case of emergency scenario where you guys win. Because I feel like if Ohio State wins, more than likely they'll probably play Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. They'll probably win because Wisconsin's been really wonky all year. Like, you don't know what to expect out of them. So I feel like if Ohio State wins this game, it's, hey, everything's fine. Ohio State's probably going to be a lock to make it. But if you guys come in there and win, it literally is going to change. It could change the landscape of who gets in.
Yeah, I think just – and I know going back, like, you know, I have some friends who are Michigan – most of my friends are Michigan people. But, you know, some Michigan State friends, and we exchange text messages and everything about everything. And, you know – as far as like the committee goes on that point, it's like there wasn't consistency, and I'm obviously biased Michigan, but like for the longest time they had Ohio State over Oregon and Oregon over Ohio State, but because Oregon had beat Ohio State earlier in the year, but then the head to head they didn't like apply it as much to the Michigan State situation. And I mean, look, we can sit and say, like, you know, that's a game, you know, Michigan's up 16 points late in the third quarter. You know, you can point the finger at refs, whatever. I mean, Michigan never should have blew a 16 point lead like that. But the thing is like, that's one of those weird things where it kind of circles back. It's like, that's probably a game that Michigan wins 8 out of 10 times, but the fact that they didn't, like, there should be some credit, you know, to Michigan State there. I think the committee, one thing that, and it's kind of like a conspiracy theory a little bit, is they try to, sometimes they forecast, like, they're also looking ahead and they're supposed to not be, but it's clearly evident to me in their rankings that they do, because they want to set a precedent to where, like, if certain scenarios play out, that they kind of have a scapegoat. I'm struggling to think of an exact scenario right now, but if you pay really close attention to the rankings, they try to pad themselves in case of situations. And I think that was one, like, right now, you know, you mentioned if Michigan were to beat Ohio State, well, on paper, everything should kind of get a little bit wonky, but I don't really see it going that way because of all the other one-loss teams, Michigan's consistently been ahead of all of them.
One I do have for you, though, is I can still see a world, because I'm looking at the rankings right now, I don't think Notre Dame will make it just based on the Cincinnati head-to-head and the fact they're not going to be playing in a conference championship game. My big question, too, is Oklahoma State. I still think they're the outside dogs to truly make it, because if they can beat Oklahoma and Bedlam this Saturday and they win the Big 12, I think there is a case to be made for them, because if Cincinnati loses, whether it be to Eastern Carolina, which they should win, or to Houston, which that may be the game they lose, I feel like Cincinnati's that same thing. That Cincinnati, look, they're giving them a moment in the sun. The second that they lose, though, it's like, okay, it's like you're done, because if Cincinnati loses and Oklahoma State runs the table, I think Oklahoma State very well could be the fourth team. My whole thing with Michigan, though, was just I think that, look, if Michigan, like, loses a Saturday, it is what it is. I feel like the Rose Bowl is probably going to end up being the you guys versus Oregon, which isn't the worst-case scenario, I guess, but at the same time, too, do you see where I'm coming at?
Yeah, no, for sure. It'll be interesting. I mean, that's the thing, too, is, like, a lot of people make a big deal out of like the rankings, and it's fun. Like, I kind of get it. Like, you know, it makes for a good TV in the moment, and it gives them something to debate about for, you know, an hour on air, and then people debate it over and over. And, you know, whether or not you agree, disagree, whatever, at the end of the day, you've got people talking about what you're talking about, college football. So that's kind of like the strategy, and it's working, even if like people don't necessarily agree with it. So that's just, you know, but so many of these things that people debate and argue about, they end up playing themselves out. And that's the most important thing. But I do get it, because it is, you know, some people will look at it and say, well, hey, you know, if the season ended today, like, my team would be screwed based on their logic. So I get both sides of it, but luckily enough, you know, these things tend to play themselves out.
Yeah, I get that. I just wanted to throw that out there as, hey, I think this is one of those whole, you know, they have to keep all scenarios open, even though I feel like they're going to try to keep it as easy as they can, considering, like I said, look, at the end of the day, if I'm the committee, they're probably going to want, look, Georgia and Alabama probably are going to be there. Ohio State should make it.
Yep.
And then the fourth seed, I feel like that's what it's like every year, except in years past, it was usually Alabama, Clemson, and then the other two were kind of like randoms, with 2019 obviously being the exception. So it was always like, even in years past, it was always Alabama, Clemson, and Oklahoma. And then the fourth was just like a random place filler. Like, hell, the year Washington made it and got the gap, and then Alabama kicked their ass in the Peach Bowl.
That's the thing, too, is like, you know, that's one of the main, and I'm for expansion. I think 8 would be a perfect number, but that's one of the main arguments, is they're like, you know, right now there's just such a big, with the exception of the very first year when Ohio State ended up running the table, with their second and third string quarterbacks, they, you know, that's one of the big arguments right now, is like, look, why do we need more teams when there's a sizable gap just about every year between teams, you know, 3 and 4 and then on, like, the gap is just so huge typically.
What I normally would do, because when I look at 5 through 8 this year, I don't think there's a huge gap between the four teams that are in the four right now. And then you have Michigan, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, and Baylor. Because Baylor, a team who's really bounced back this year. I know they have 2 losses, but Baylor's looked really good in their moments. They have a really good defense. So I think if you were doing it this year, I don't think there is, but I think there would be some years where, you know what, yeah, you're going to get a game, maybe one or two, where, you know what, a quarterfinal instead of a semifinal could be an ass whooping.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think overall, in the interest of fairness and in the interest of money, I do think that they get to the 8 teams. And I mean, I guess you never know, right? Like, crazier things have happened. I you know, every time somebody makes a graphic of like what an 8-team playoff would look like this year, it's just like, you see the matchups on paper and you're like, how as a fan of football, like, how could you say no to that?
Exactly. It's one of those things where you look at it, you're like, look, it's going to make more money. They're going to have bigger television ratings, because obviously this year you're going to have New Year's Eve, where you have the 2 semifinals, which I'm still trying to figure out in my head how Herb Street and Fowler are going to call one of those games, and then they're going to have to go to Pasadena and do the Rose Bowl, because I know they usually do that every year.
Yeah, no, it'll be – I mean, they – logistically, they always seem to figure that out, but yeah, it's crazy. Their schedules.
Private jets exist for a reason. And also, I'm going to tell you right now, I brought it up on the podcast before and the guests after we record. But for folks out there who did not read the book yet, read Kirk Herbstreit's book. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to dive into that one yet. I did see you tweeting about it, and despite him being a Buckeye, it's definitely, I think it's obviously that's just you know, part of it, but probably a book that, you know, any fan could enjoy.
Exactly. And also, too, the fact that his dad coached with Bo Schembechler before Bo went to Ohio State, and that his dad could have followed Bo to Michigan. So who knows where the Herb Street goes, but it just truly shows the whole background of his story is one of those ones where it's like, cool, because there's a lot of stuff I had no idea about, you know?
Right. No, exactly.
Exactly. And then going into this weekend, obviously it's rivalry weekend. You guys get Ohio State, a match we were bereft of last year, this Michigan-Ohio State game. I know game day will be there. I don't know if the game is going to be called on Fox, if we're going to get Fowler or Herbstreit, or if we're going to get Gus Johnson and his overzealous excitement to it. So I was just trying to figure out where this one's going, but
yeah, it's going to be on. It's Fox is locked in the contract for that game for like the foreseeable future, so it's going to be a Klatt and Gus call.
I do like Joel Klatt. I will say that I like him because he's like, how do I say this correctly? He has his knowledge, but at the same time, too, he's not like has his like opinionated takes. Like his opinion's like very sound. Like I didn't remember watching him break down his college playoff bracket, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. So when he does try to set a narrative, it's based on like very like either sharp opinion, if not just like backed up by like stats. Another thing that I like is he's not afraid like to, and I think he's very fair. If you talk to Michigan State fans, they think he slobbers over Michigan too much. And it's funny, he had to do a whole bit about that, explaining himself and why. Like he says that, you know, Michigan State is the fan base that constantly gives him the most like grief or whatever, but it's just funny. But anyways, he's also not afraid. I think he's very objective, very insightful, and he's not afraid to like, you know, you don't see a whole lot of commentators kind of like dig into the officials during a game, and he's not afraid to go there. So I just think it just comes off really like pure and authentic.
Exactly. 100%. I only ask about the question just because I don't know exactly who goes where, but then I feel like once you say, yeah, Michigan, Ohio State's locked in for Fox, I feel like ESPN then will probably do Bedlam, and I want to say it's in Stillwater this year, but there's just like with this game in general though, I think there is a chance that, look, because I think John Harbaugh pretty much knows, too, that if he doesn't beat Ohio State here, it's going to look really bad, and that's when I think boost. Because I'm just going to come out and say this, it's going to get my words mixed up in typical Greg fashion. If he doesn't win this game, I can see a very good chance that he's on that coaching carousel with the rest of the guys that are on there that now includes Dan Mullen from Florida.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Like, obviously, this is a game that Michigan has been overdue to win for, you know, they haven't won it. It's been 10 years now, which is just crazy. Cause like in my early childhood, like no matter how good Ohio State was, like Michigan, like, you know, would win at like a 2 out of 3 clip. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just went super heavy into the Ohio State favor. So Definitely due to win one. I just don't know if this is the year. And Michigan's got a decent squad, but this team, this Ohio State team, is loaded. And not only are they loaded, they are clicking at the right time.
I just zoned up for a quick second. Were you saying that Michigan's clicking or Ohio State's clicking?
Ohio State is super loaded, and they're clicking at the right time.
My bad. I completely zoned out, folks. It happens. But yeah, you're right. Because like, I watched the game against Michigan State, where I'm like, all right. Like when I saw the 19.5 point spread, I was like, I think that's a little too high. I think there's going to be a chance that Michigan State covers, and that, like, you know how last year when Ohio State played Indiana. Indiana held them really close. I think it was like 45-38 final. I thought it was going to be like that kind of game. No, I remember I went out, I had to go run some errands, and then I came back home, and I see 49-3, and I'm like, well, so much for Michigan State's hopes.
Yeah, I mean, that was one that I actually had predicted as quite – I didn't ever realize it would be that lopsided, but I thought it could get pretty ugly simply because Michigan State – every team that Michigan State played this year, their quarterback had their best game. And what's Ohio State's greatest strength? The pass. Their passing attack. They've got 3 future NFL wide receivers starting, NFL tight end, probably a future NFL quarterback, even though those tend to not pan out so well. Although Justin Fields is looking a little bit better these days. I think, you know, that had, you know, massacre written all over it. But, you know, I do follow these teams very, very closely throughout the year. But yeah, I mean, even outside of that game, they've just, you know, if you look at the early tape of Ohio State from early in the year, it's almost like a different team. Like if they, you know, they would never lose to Oregon if they were to meet up right now. It's just a different team that's just really finding their stride at the best time to find their stride.
Exactly, and Oregon played so bad against Utah that the doc even was out of it. He didn't want to watch anything. He didn't want anything to do with that game. He was watching videos on his leather or phone or a tablet. I do agree with you. Also, another player to watch out for is the tight end Rucker from Long Island, who I think will be going in the NFL draft this year as well. I thought he was going to come out last year, but I feel like he came back. So obviously, there's the Kyle Pitts factor. You have Garrett Wilson, who's going to be going in the first round. You have I know I tweeted about this, and you said Patriots don't have a top 10 pick. But until he is not selected by the New England Patriots, I am saying that Chris Olave will be a Patriot because he basically fits the mold and he's their prototypical receiver. That's why I say that.
Yeah, no, I every reason to want a guy like that. I mean, he is one of the best route runners that I have seen. Like, he runs like people have compared him to Amari Cooper, who is like an all-time route runner. And great hands. It's just it's incredible. It really is, and it pains me to like give them so much credit, but I think, you know, with a decent combine showing, I think he in Ohio State, if there's one position where, you know, they're kind of getting a rap for being bad quarterback producers because it's more the college system that they run, but wide receiver is something that just translates. You've seen, and wide receivers are hitting their stride early. You look at guys like Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. I know those are not Ohio State guys, but I'm just saying, like, you know, Ohio State's had guys, you know, ball out as receivers. You look at like the Michael Thomases of the world, you know, going all the way back to Ted Ginn, and there's been so many guys in between.
DJ Moore.
Yeah, I mean, they're just, it's crazy.
Exactly, even two guys like Joey Galloway back in the 90s, let's shout out Kirk Tree for that one. My whole thing with Ohio, like, you're right. I think Ohio State, look, they're the top dogs in the Big Ten for now. But Michigan, though, I will say this. Even though I think two of the three I mentioned are going to be first-rounders, they're not going to be drafted as high, in my opinion, as this guy. And this is a guy who I really like because he brings good character on and off the field. And that is Michigan defensive end Aiden Hutchinson. He has played great this year. He is that guy that he reminds me kind of like what J.J. Watt like was. I'm only saying that now because I'm talking about J.J. Watt like early 2010s, like mid 2010s, you know, before the injuries kind of kicked in for him, where I feel like he can go into an NFL locker room and be that voice on a team that needs it in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that's a really good comparison. And I think, you know, he's built like how J.J. was at Wisconsin, and he's just got that relentless.
Minus the buzz cut.
Yeah, exactly. It's got just that relentless like motor, and it's just, you know, you just like a lot of people have given him so much credit for helping turn Michigan around, you know, coming off an uncharacteristically god awful year, and then, you know, his counterpart, you know, Aiden's been eating a lot of double teams and that, but that's really opened up, and now Ojabo, who's the opposite defensive end. And obviously, I mean, it goes without saying those two are going to be key for Michigan having any chance. You can't give OSU all day to sit in the pocket and throw. I don't care who the quarterback is, whether it's Stroud or whoever. Like, if they have time, it's only a matter of time before those talented receivers get open. Those two will be absolute keys. And yeah, it's been great to see, you know, Aiden get his due credit, you know, because what I'm thinking, he's like top five, pretty much consensus at this point.
I would say so. I would still personally put Kayvon Thibodeaux above him. I feel like,
oh yeah, definitely, because his ceiling's just so much higher.
Exactly, and I also feel like too this year, I think this coming draft reminds me a lot of 2016. You know, where there's not really a set quarterback. Now, obviously, there was Dak Prescott in the fourth round coming out of Mississippi State. But with a lot of the guys in 2016, there was no bona fide first overall pick. I feel like this year you're either going to have someone move up and grab a quarterback, even though, look, hey, Detroit could take a quarterback, and we can get into that bit later because I know you're now more a Buck fan and a Brady fan than a Lion fan for obvious reasons. But I feel like because of the Goff contract, I feel like Detroit can afford to, you know, draft Kayvon Thibodeaux with the first overall pick. And then either draft a quarterback with the Rams pick because there will be someone there, or you can even take that pick, trade up and move, or even wait a year for someone else to come out, like I don't know if they want to wait for Ungalalele, if they want to wait for DJ, because I'm not going to try to butcher that last name. That's my whole thing with that, because I feel like I said this year's draft, it's more going to be position heavy. It's going to be not 2013 by any means. No, 2013 was a god awful draft, even though go Chips.
It's funny you say that, because I've seen a lot of comparisons to a lot of people want to liken this to 2013, and I think it's just because of a lack of a bona fide quarterback. But this class is too much defensive, and I think wide receiver talent to be kind of compared to that.
Oh, God, no. And also considering, too, I don't know if you've ever done this. Like, I've seen TikToks of it before where people will be like, guys randomly think of stuff, and they'll be like, 2013 draft. And I'm like, the second overall pick was out of the league within 4 years. Like, I'm telling you right now, if Aiden Hutchinson goes number two overall, he's not going to be out of the NFL in 5 years. No.
You wouldn't think so.
That's what I'm trying to say. So this draft, yeah, you know what? It's not as – I'm going to use the word sexy. It's not as sexy as the last few years with the quarterback position, but there's still a lot of talent to be had.
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, I think you hit the nail right on the head with your last point with regards to the Lions. I mean, they were like – They have so many other needs. Like quarterback, you might as well just wait, especially since there's not a on paper can't miss prospect right now.
Exactly. My other thing too is I had a guest come on here, Keegan Stiefel, who's he covers the Patriots. He's a bit of a he got accepted to Ohio State, but he ended up going to UMass Lowell instead. So he kind of cheers for Ohio State. And he always that's why like he's the one who got me onto the Chris Olave onto the Patriots train. Shout out Keegan. But with what was I trying to say? I lost my train of thought. But I honestly lost my train of thought because I went on and gave a shout out to Keegan. What were you saying?
We were talking about the Lions a little bit and like just the talent of this upcoming class. How it's not as like sexy.
Right. You know what? I'm going to say this just because I lost my train of thought and I feel awful for it. Draft for need, not for appeal.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what more teams need to do, and it's just crazy to me that, you know, a quarterback is just not – it's like the Jets. Like, a quarterback, no matter who it wasn't going to fix your problems. You have – when you can't protect and you can't defend, a quarterback just not going to fix anything.
Tyler Lindenbaum in a Jets jersey already gives me nightmares. I do not want to think about him and Mekhi Becton on the same line.
Oh my, yeah, I'd say next to the Lions, the Jets are like the most like sorry franchise right now.
Exactly, but the only thing that the Jets have going for them is the fact that they have probably going to, the Jets, there's a very good chance they have either two top five or two top 10 picks this year. They're definitely going to have one top five. The fact that they may have two in the top 10 is kind of scary.
And I wouldn't touch a skill position guy. Like, build the trenches.
Exactly. Build the trenches because I think their dream scenario would be, like, you know, get a Lindenbaum. Even there's Marvin Leal from Texas A&M. There's another kid coming out of Alabama. Because I'm going to go on a tangent here, but I'm going to say this with all offensive linemen. There are certain schools that build them, and Michigan obviously is coming there, even though Cesar Ruiz has struggled a bit this year. But you still have Taylor Lewan. You have who else do you have in that category? Taylor Lewan, Michael Owenu, of course, and I want to say there's
Jalen Mayfield.
I'm going to Jalen Mayfield. Even with that offensive line is shit. Them, Iowa, but the main three, in my opinion, for building offensive linemen is Iowa, Wisconsin, and Alabama.
Yeah, they're another rival, I give an honorable mention to like Notre Dame.
Oh yeah, there's certain guys like I heard this on part of my tape from Barstool's Joke One Time where they're like, they're interviewing Mike McGlinchey. Obviously, he's one of the top 10. He's from Notre Dame, and they were like, Mike McGlinchey, you play offensive line at Notre Dame. You just hear the name, you just think, boom, Notre Dame offensive lineman.
Or like Quentin Nelson.
Exactly. Like I feel like those schools, like Alabama's the exception, but I feel like Notre Dame, Wisconsin, and Iowa, it's just those big, beefy Midwestern boys.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like corn-fed Midwest dudes.
Exactly, like worked out on a farm. Like you could just,
and the SEC ones are just like athletic freaks that are like 6'6", 320, and can run like a 4.9.
It's silly. Like Andrew Thomas, Jedrick Wills, Alex Leatherwood, obviously. he's been okay this year. But even too out of the Pac-12, he got some good ones, like Colton Miller, for example. And then also to Brandon Scherff in Washington. That's another one from Iowa.
Yep.
Yeah. But
they pumped him out.
Exactly. They just keep pumping him up. But no, on and off the college football playoff. Look, we hope everything kind of like figures this stuff out. Hopefully everything kind of gets right. And you know what? I just hope this year we do have four candidates, because the only other scenario I can see which could really unlock Pandora's box is Alabama losing either to Auburn in an upset, or the SEC championship against Georgia.
Yeah, you know, that's what's going to be really interesting. And like, I think as long as, and I don't, it escapes me, who does Georgia have this weekend?
I'm pretty sure it's Georgia. If it's rivalry week, I'm going to see Georgia Tech. Right, so that's a dub. So that's a dub.
Like, barring, like, I mean, they're going to blow them out. I think, like, Georgia could even lose the SEC championship. They're a lock at this point. They're not going to fall past four.
I think Georgia would have to get their asses kicked by Alabama to get kicked out at this point. I think if they were to go in there and lose close, they still get in. But if Alabama for some reason blows them out, then we're talking a different story.
Yeah, and just the way Georgia's built, they're not – they're is could they lose? Absolutely. But they're not – it's hard to fathom them, no matter who they're playing, getting blown out, because their defense is just so good. Like, you know – And they've got pieces on offense. So it's really hard to fathom, you know, seeing a blowout.
I think with both schools, they have good position players. It's just quarterback's the only question, because for as good as all the offenses are, I feel like Bryce Young, obviously he's a freshman, and then you don't really know what you're going to get with Stenson Bennett, and then JT Daniels obviously is on the bench. So I think those quarterbacks, they just have to do the bare minimum and not turn the ball over, and they'll win.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing, right? It's like, you know, you start talking about, like, future matchups, and, you know, there's a reason, I think, why, like, you know, they play the games, obviously, but, like, Georgia is just the most complete team, despite the question at quarterback, and even if, you know, one of them's having a really, really bad game, I think you could flip the switch to the other and, you know, even attack it that way. I mean, they've had an answer for everybody this year. You know, at the end of the day, today's game, a good offense beats a good defense, just especially in college, in my opinion. So that's why I think a lot of people are already like eyeballing an Ohio State Georgia matchup, because that's what everybody wants to see. And that would be, I think that'd be their best test, like, outside of an Alabama.
Exactly. Like, all roads lead to Indianapolis. And how funny would it be if the one Big Ten representative were to make it to the final in Big Ten country?
Yeah, no, it'd be Buckeye heavy over there if that ends up being the case, for sure.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I just want to switch gears here quickly, talk NFL, because obviously I didn't realize this until we're done recording, but you happened to be at the game that I was watching live Monday night. You were at Giants-Bucks.
Yeah.
Buccaneers obviously got the big win. Look, I had the Giants on the spread just because I was like, look, they always managed to keep it close, but this was not the case. This game was an ass-whooping.
Yeah, I think I think the Bucs really came out wanting to prove something. You know, poor performance. You know, the New Orleans performance wasn't great, but they've gone into New Orleans before. It's a tough place to play. It's the first time you're hearing that level of crowd noise in New Orleans. And, you know, it's just things happen there. And it is a tough place to play, so you kind of just, like, chalk it up as, like, okay, whatever. But to see them come out of a bye week, and with the showing, and Tom, you know, no problem admitting it, arguably his worst game in a Bucs uniform, just from a read perspective, because they had Mike Evans open a lot. And, you know, fans were kind of, like, wondering, like, what's going on? The offense doesn't seem to be clicking. So fast forward, you know, going, if you would have told me, you know, if they skate by the Giants and, or excuse me, the football team and kind of come into that one, or coming off of, you know, an easy win, I think it's a different perspective, but only because they, you know, came in like feeling like, okay, like we need to right this ship right now. You saw they came out right away, first drive. It was no huddle, up tempo, trying to, you know, inject some life into that offense. So obviously, we know it's very good. It's like what happened to it. I think that's the reason the score kind of got like it did. Otherwise, I would have agreed. You know, Giants probably keep it close, like they kind of are capable of.
You know what? I'm the same. I have the same kind of logic as you, where I even noticed that right away too. There no tempo, and the big thing with the Buccaneers too, that was that last year. It's happening again this year, and it happened with Tom in New England. You give him time to throw the ball. You get good protection in front of him. That's a recipe for your team to lose. That's honestly what's going to happen. The Giants gave no pressure to Tom. Hell, when Tom's running crazy like that, you know, where he's getting first down yardage on third down, where he's gaining more than 5 yards, it's like the South Park expression, you're going to have a bad time. And that's literally what happened with the Giants on Monday night. And then even to the defense, my big concern too is defensively, because of no Vita Vea, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball. He's a big cog in that defensive line. We got the big man interception and a big man touchdown, so it was a good day for the big boys. With Steve McClendon with a pick, Andrew Thomas with the touchdown. But all in all, this was just one of those wins where I think everyone expected, look, the Bucs are going to get back on board. They're going to bounce back. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I love the fact that there's parity in the NFL this year. Like, we don't really know who's going to win. Like, sure, Kansas City and Tampa are starting to figure it out. But at the same time, too, we don't really know what's going to happen.
No, and that's – but I was just having this conversation with a friend. This year is – and it's more so in the AFC, but it's both sides. It is wide open. Teams that you thought, like, were going to be untouchable, like the Bucs and the Rams, they've had some very, like, kind of like, whoa, like, what's going on moments. Teams like the Chiefs, obviously, their struggles have been well documented. Then you have like the Ravens, who, you know, look like they're going to just be captain comeback and come from behind every game. No lead is safe type of a deal. And now they're losing some questionable game. It's just, like you said, there's so much parity. And, you know, it's been upset, quote unquote, upset city for like the last couple weeks in the league.
Exactly, and not also like in the AFC even too. Now you have Buffalo struggling a bit, and then there's a huge matchup with New England, because at this time this year, I don't think anyone thought New England was going to be exactly there, especially when they're 2-4. Patriots fucked around, now they're 7-4. And then you also have two other teams like Cincinnati finally taking that leap forward, Cleveland being kind of inconsistent. The LA Chargers looking pretty good, and then I thought the Raiders were going to be there, but they seem to be raidering, if you will, where...
Yeah.
They find, like, just from November and December, they find ways to lose. My only gripe with the Chiefs right now is I know they've won 3 in a row, but when you look, like, 4 in a row, excuse me. So Giants, Packers. Right? Yeah, they won 4 in a row, and only one of the wins was truly impressive, because if I look at it, they beat the Giants by 3, they beat the Jordan Love Packers by less than a touchdown. And then Dallas was kind of more – that was just a defensive game, and that they – Dallas made more mistakes than they did. So my whole thing with Kansas City is, until that offense goes out there and truly puts on a clinic consistently, that's when I'm going to say, okay, look, now we can start talking about Kansas City being in a serious contendership role. Will they probably be there in late January? There's a very good chance of it. I'm not going to doubt them. But I'm just saying, like, for me personally, I need to see that offense truly prove something. Like how this week, for example – that the Bucs went in and took care of the Giants. Not that they just beat them, but they took care of business.
Yeah, they're still a team, like you said, you made some good points. Like, they're, you know, some of their wins have come and they've been close against some inferior teams, you know, to kind of get back on track. At the end of the day, you got to win those games, and you can point at it and say that they're doing that. But these are the coming weeks here where you start to see teams kind of really take off, and that ends up determining, you know, you see the trends every year. The teams that get hot right now have the best chance to make a serious run.
Exactly, because like Mike Florio said it a couple of times, I'm going to echo the sentiment now because I said before, there's always those teams though that like figure it out right now at Thanksgiving. There's always those teams that figure it out at Thanksgiving, and those are the ones to truly, you know, go out there and get the win and figure it out and make a stretch run in January.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah, that's why I just wanted to echo the sentiments of look with the whole with parity and just everything like that with the league, and then also too, we'll see what happens tomorrow because obviously we have the three slated games: Detroit, Chicago. Which now there were reports surfacing of Matt Nagy could get fired. And I've heard this, and I want to run this by you. I see a very similar thing could potentially happen. Like, you know how last year the Lions hosted the Texans weren't that good. Deshaun Watson went in there and had his best game of the year. Will Fuller looked incredible. And then 2 days later, Patricia was fired. I know there was those reports that came out from – so it's weird. So he's not a Bears reporter, but he's won a Pulitzer Prize, which is a very big award in writing for the Chicago – I think it was the Chicago Sun-Times, not the Tribune. And so when I saw that, I'm like, okay, I'll bite it and I'll believe this. I think if the Lions do honestly come out tomorrow and just win but dominate from the start in a, what would be a rare fashion, that's where I can see Nagy getting fired. But if Nagy does win tomorrow, even if it's close, I still feel like that's the kind of game, you know, where, hey, if the Bears win, Nagy's job is safe.
Yeah, I think if you were going to fire him, you probably would have by now just to kind of get it out of the way. But I do think they're going to give him this game. And you know, look, if somehow the Lions pull this one out, and I think it was already like over a month ago, I was saying this is the Lions' best chance at a win. I know that they ended up playing the Steelers to a tie in an all-time god-awful game that nobody, if you're a casual, or if that was the game that introduced you to football, I feel sorry because that's not a true reflection of football. That was awful. But as far as like this game goes, like if you look at the Lions schedule, this is their best chance. And I still don't think that they're going to get it done. So therefore I think Nagy survives another week.
Exactly. Yeah. Like even to, I know that the Bears play the, I want to say, I think it's the Cardinals next week. Even though they play the Cardinals, I still feel like, hey, if you win this game, your leash is extended. But with that being said, I know everyone's saying this game is going to be boring. We're going to be forced to watch this. Yes, I'll say this. This game's going to suck. Am I taking work off tomorrow to watch all the games? Yes. Am I going to gamble on this game? Yes. Am I taking the under? You better fucking believe it.
What is that set up, by the way?
The under is, I know the spread is Bears are 3.5, which I honestly want to take the Lions to cover that, the 3.5 points. But the over-under is at 41.5.
41.5. Man. And that, like, for those who are unfamiliar, that's low as is.
I have this game. I'm sorry to cut you off.
21-20 game.
I was going to say 20-17 is an ideal finishing score for this game.
Yeah, I could see it being, 20-13.
Even better. I just am saying that because I'm in a spread pool with my dad right now, and then that he signed me up for with some people he knows. And right now I have the Lions to cover the spread 3.5. I may change that, but a big portion of that too is also does Jared Goff go? Because if Jared Goff goes, I might take it. But if because here's the thing, the Lions too. The Lions haven't been exactly getting it. I think they've only gotten their asses kicked, I want to say, 2 or 3 times out of their 10 games this year.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
One of them, I'm going to tell you right now, this is how much bad luck. So, folks, for those of you who know, I post gambling videos on my TikTok that I also post on Instagram weekly. I have not had a profitable Sunday yet. Week 8, I took the Lions on the money line thinking that the Eagles game was going to be an easy dub, and they got their asses kicked. So that's how much it goes to show how my gambling season has been this year.
Ugh.
Been doing better with hockey. Yeah,
it can be tough. It can be real tough. I think I've told you before, like, I'm a big fan of just, like, obviously there's some spreads that just stand out at me, but I'm a big fan of just, like, just straight up money line because you just see so many just gross backdoor covers. Or garbage time scores, and it's just like, ugh. It's hard to stomach.
like the two that I've experienced this year was actually one was the Lions week one against San Francisco. They had an ugly backdoor cover, and then there was the one with the Jets, obviously, a few weeks ago, where the Jets almost got the backdoor cover against the Colts on Thursday Night Football.
Oh yeah, that was almost an all timer.
Scared the shit out of me. So yeah, that's my only thing with tomorrow is, look, I expect a low scoring game. I just think it's going to be a lot of, like, you know, third downs, chances to do something, and it's going to be a field goal game. Hell, this game could be 9-6 for all I care. All I know is, look, my money's on the under. It's just too easy to pass up. And I've also looked at it too. I think it's only the San Francisco game, and I want to say the Rams game, the Lions scored more than 17 points in the game.
Yeah, I mean, needless to say, no matter who, like, again, quarterback's not going to be an issue, but at the same time, like, Jared Goff was, people can argue he was slightly above average or just completely average in the McVay system, and the McVay system in and of itself is supposed to elevate quarterbacks. So obviously, you know, you take him out of that, put him in a really, really, really bad situation, and you get what we are seeing before us.
100%. As I quickly pull up the scores, because I actually want to see those stack quickly just to see their point totals for the year. So let's see what we got. We have 33, 17, 17, 14, 17, 11, 19, 6, 16, and 10.
Yeah, and Dan Campbell's calling the plays now, so that's a whole other thing in and of itself. It hasn't gotten any better, so.
I'll have a game here they're going to win. They're going to win Week 16 at the Atlanta Falcons.
I don't even see that.
Oh, I say that. Right.
They might be whoever who's the backup quarterback.
It's Josh Rosen. If we get Josh Rosen versus Tim Boyle, that's like going to be the worst game of all time.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, if the Falcons are just flat out of it, why not just throw Rosen out there? And then if you end up losing, you know, you might buy yourself about 3 or 4 spots in the draft.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. Oh, but you know what? The stretch run is going to be great. The college football, like, look, a college football, it's going to be great to finish because I know there's only, what, one more rankings show left, and then next Sunday, everything gets announced.
Yep. Yep, right so, after championship weekend.
Exactly, because I know for timings right now, I believe the Pac-12 goes Friday night, the Big 12 goes at noon, then the SEC, ACC gets kind of bobbled in there, because honestly, the ACC is the one show where I don't care. It's like, I think that the ACC now is slowly becoming the redheaded stepchild this year compared to, like, I say that because that's been the expression before for the Pac-12.
You know, without Clemson, you know, having, you know, any luck this year, it's down bad. I mean, Wake Forest is, you know, kind of whatever. Like, we all knew that they, you know, probably weren't as good as their ranking, but at the same time, it's like, okay, who else are you going to put there?
They're a cute story, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Virginia Tech fired their coach. Miami's a fucking disaster. Florida State's awful.
Yeah, there's a lot of just that conference as a whole, and usually you don't, like, I know even like when Clemson was just, you know, dominating, it's just interesting to see like these, you know, these teams just being so bad all at the same time. Because there's some of them are named programs that have had, you know, good runs. Virginia Tech's been good in the past. Florida State, you know, we're not super, super, super far away removed from, like, the Jameis Winston and then followed by Dalvin Cook days. And then in the 90s, they were really good. And it's just Miami.
One of the greatest teams of all time.
With the recruiting grounds of down there, I mean, it just, you know, you would think that it would just, you know, kind of click naturally, and they just, for whatever reason, have not been able to gain any traction since like the early 2000s.
Exactly. One question I wanted to ask you, obviously you're a Big Ten guy, but with the SEC moves of Oklahoma and Texas, do you think that'll hurt or do you think that'll help? Like, because obviously, look, we don't know what Texas is. Texas this year was great. really good start, and then they just completely fell off the map after losing to Oklahoma. I just gotta wonder if them moving to the big SEC is really best for the game, or is it just a profitable move?
It's a profitable move at the end of the day. I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, if you can't compete seriously for the Big 12, what chance do you think you have in the SEC? You don't. And I think that these teams from the SEC will all of a sudden really be lobbying for an extended more playoff teams, because they're gonna constantly be beating up on each other all year, and there's no way, let's say you get a two or three loss SEC team probably isn't gonna make it in over an undefeated or a one loss Big Ten team who's a champion. Versus let's say Oklahoma comes in third or fourth in the SEC with, two to three losses. It just, in all likelihood, it's just not going to happen. So, it's all about money at the end of the day. But it's a very, and I kind of miss, I try to be open-minded as much as possible. Like, I'm open to change, but like when it comes to college football, you're seeing a lot of like rivalries and history kind of, be set aside for like these lucrative moves. So that's the part I don't like about it. But it's going to be super interesting.
Exactly. And then also to Disney purchasing the SEC. So I think they're going to have, so ESPN will have the rights to the SEC, I believe, too, starting in 2024 or 25, which is going to suck for CBS, because obviously CBS is the big home for the SEC. And then also too, you have the music more than anything. You have the iconic theme song. But I will say this, too. If they don't bring them over, I won't really miss – Brad Nessler's fine, but I won't miss Gary Danielson.
Yeah, he's it's one of those things where fans, hang on to guys for so long. And it's part of, for me, it's like you hear, certain voices, and it's like, oh, I grew up with that, but – eventually, it's even like, I hate to say it, but like Lee Corso on game day is tough to watch. Like, he's just so, like, it's sad. Like, but eventually, I think you just kind of need to move on, and it's just probably overall for the best.
I'm just gonna go. I just want to pivot to that question though. What's the issue with Corso? Just your personal issues. Do you think it's just one of those things where it's like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks kind of thing, or is it just
no,
his age?
No, I think it's his age. I mean, he's just really showing it. He's forgetful. It's kind of, it was fun. The last few years, it was kind of funny because he would drop like a random like curse word. He had the infamous F-bomb just flat out live on TV. But then now it's just kind of like he's fumbling over his words. He doesn't really kind of know what he's talking about. He's quoting the wrong teams. It's just, it's tough to watch.
Oh, what you mean? I'm sorry, I love that clip.
Yeah.
I love that clip of him swearing at Houston. It's just more than him actually swearing is how Herb Street reacts to it, where he just like freezes up, and then Fowler, you could tell he's just trying not to burst out into laughter. Like, those are like the best things about that. And then even too, he did it with UCF too, where he's just like, no one gives a shit about them. I can see where you're coming from though. Like, I don't pay too much attention to it. I feel like with him, though, I think it's just a nostalgia kick. Like, obviously, ESPN had the very emotional return of Dick Vitale to the booth last night to call the UCLA-Gonzaga game. But yeah. I can kind of get where you're coming from. Like, I like the panel of – I think if you removed Corso and then put Pollock in there more as a full-time figure, I don't think anyone would complain. But I feel like – I think you probably have some of the guys still campaigning for Corso to stay.
Yeah, I think I could see, like, as early as, like, next year – he just kind of, maybe he just does like the picks at the very end and then gets to do his headgear moment, either in person, or they just kind of bring him in like on like a feed, like they did during the pandemic year last year.
Exactly. I can see either happening. He's been there, I think, for almost 40 years doing that.
Yeah. And he's an all-time great. He'll be remembered as such, but yeah, it's tough to watch.
I completely get where you're coming from with that. I just wanted to ask the opinion on that, because like I like the panel the way it is now, but I can see what you mean too, where it's like he knows his stuff, and then, but at the same time too, you're right. His age is showing, and it's kind of like, look, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, like I said before.
Right.
Exactly. Oh, well, anyway, I think that's going to wrap it up here for episode number 132 of YWC Football Talk. It's been some good college talk. We talked a little bit about the Lions-Bears game tomorrow. Obviously, we could talk about some other games, but look, I did that on Monday. So, and also, too, the Lions is more of the focus because, obviously, for as much as Joe loves Tom Brady and everything, he is still – I feel like there still is that little kid in there that is a Lions fan, so that's why we mainly went down that rabbit hole.
Unfortunately, that's so true.
Well, anyway, at least you still have your probably kings of interest in every one baseball team, the Detroit Tigers, this year to be happy about going forward. So there's that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there.
Exactly. Well, anyway, folks, thank you very much for listening. Have a great have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. If you bet, please do bet responsibly like I echo every week. And you know what? Hopefully this week's finally a good cash week for everybody because, look, let's all bet like degenerates, but bet responsibly. And enjoy college football and the NFL this weekend, everyone.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.